Today's episode is brought to you by Progressive, where drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. Quote now at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
The Fable and Folly Network supports creators of exceptional audio stories, including the one you're listening to right now. If you love our shows, we want to hear from you. Complete our listener survey at fableandfolly.com/survey. This will help us learn more about you, what you like, what you'd like to hear more of, and how we can maintain an inclusive, safe atmosphere. As a thank you for your participation, we have extras and behind-the-scenes content from your favorite shows. Fans make the network what it is. Thanks for listening, and we can't wait to hear from you. Find our listener survey at fableandfolly.com/survey today.
Welcome back, my kindred, to Canada by Night, a Vampire the Masquerade live play podcast. Everett and Val captured one of their assailants, but only after Val murdered the other two and called Everett Dad. Evangeline was drained of blood to the point of torpor, and Doris was treated at the Santis General Hospital, then climbed on top of a taxi, having apparently expected a horse and carriage. Will the Coterie heed the voice on Everett's radio and abandon New Haven and throw themselves at the mercy of Lilith and her children? Find out now as we return to the world of darkness.
Everett, you stand with your hand on your radio, receiving no response from the psychopath who, according to any logic, now has Evangeline. And even worse, when you look up, you see that the sky is beginning to softly brighten in the distance. Your time is running out this night, and you need to return to the sheriff's office. What do you do?
You know, that was going to be my instinct to begin with, was to get back to the sheriff's office, just because we need backup. We need other people helping us search for Officer Clark. So, Everett will look to Val and say,
throw him in the van. We got to get back to the station.
She will do that. And then it's either figure out if the van that we wedged in the alley will work, or if we need to just move that van and get the van that has no windshield out. One of these vans will have to work for us.
Okay. I think ours that like capped off the alley, I think, is the easiest to get back into and try.
Yeah. Who's going to be driving?
Val will drive. Yeah, she's not going to get her way.
And Everett, again, probably isn't too sure on where the station is. it's the first night and he was in a chase, yeah. So he's probably a little turned around.
All right, Val, can you roll me, I will say, strength and drive?
Okay.
I'm saying strength because if it was jammed on the corner or there was some part of it that could be bent back into shape, that's how I'm including that in this roll, and then drive for her ability to do that.
All right, here we go.
I say she just punches it until it does what she wants.
It's worked for her so far.
Mm-hmm. I received 4 successes.
You free it from the wall with a quick tug and then can drive away the van clean. You leave the mess that you had made behind you both as you pull away. There is a drive back to the sheriff's station. It's not tremendously long, but there are that awkward moment with the silent captive in the back of the van, the two of you on the road. And Everett, you can't help but remember that in a moment of conflict, Val called you Dad.
Yeah.
How do you want to address this?
If we weren't desperately looking for Officer Clark, I would want to have like a conversation about like what was that back there. But Everett is feeling like as soon as he brings it up, we're either A, going to arrive at the station, or the radio is going to crackle to life with some new information. And he just wants to be ready for that. And the desire to address it is there because that was just absolutely buck wild for that to come out of one of his deputies' mouths. But it just doesn't feel appropriate to bring it up at this time. So he's just kind of sitting on it. Like, he's very uncomfortable. He's not looking at Val. He's just looking straight ahead, and he's immensely uncomfortable with it. But he knows he's got to sit on it for now.
Val, you're driving. You have a captive in the back, and you've committed two absolutely vicious murders before being pinned down by a man who is not your dad, but who you called your dad. Mm-hmm. What are you thinking and what are you feeling during this silent drive where he does not speak or look at you?
I think the main thing is she's definitely giving off vibe. She's completely staring forward. She has both hands on the wheel, and she is giving off similar vibes of, like, do not fucking talk. Like, it's that, like, if you fucking talk, like, just don't. Like, she's just hoping he will be cool and won't talk about it. And I think she even, like, she's, like, grinding her teeth and will fish in her front pocket for another toothpick and, like, just chew on a toothpick. But she's feeling very embarrassed, but not embarrassed in, like, that she was embarrassed she called him dad, but she feels like she was very vulnerable to a complete stranger, and that makes her very uncomfortable. So she's just praying he just keeps his fucking mouth shut. And so that it's like the most tense, invisible wall drive in silence back.
Yeah.
It's like when you accidentally call like your teacher, like in elementary school. You had that? You, like, called your mom?
I called dad, like, too. I called Miss Wilkins' mom, and everybody laughed.
Called Madame Ritz's mom. Yeah, so just don't address it.
I was going to say, Ryan, describing the scenario that you have one captive, I was going to say you have two captives, because Everett is just kind of locked into the passenger seat, unable to look at you, only able to look forward.
I think they're in a similar place of just... Yeah. We're going to get through this, and then something else will happen, and we can focus on that. And that's all we want.
Mm-hmm. Only even worse, Val, at your core, you are haunted by the image of bullets tearing through Cherry, who you had to leave behind the retirement home. But you arrive at the sheriff's office after a drive so tense and white knuckle that neither of you could even discuss the case at hand. You just desperately needed to not discuss the time someone was called dad.
We hit like every red light on the way there. It was the goddamn worst.
When you roll back into the parking lot, you see there's a squad car remaining as had been laid out at the beginning of the night. And the front door has been repaired. There is a replacement door. It's a little bit bigger. It looks like it's been cut down to size, but it's being hammered into place by...
Is it Troy?
Yes, Troy. By Troy Strange, who's hammering the last few bolts into place to mount it. And as you climb out, I'm imagining you bring your prisoner in with you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Excellent. You re-enter the station, and inside you see there is still the mess that had been made of desks and papers flown everywhere, but the bodies have been cleaned up, seemingly scooped and mopped by Troy while waiting for the door to be delivered. And there is an indigenous man, a young indigenous man in a plaid shirt and jeans and cowboy boots, who just says, "Hey, you got that door. I told you, you need it. Come to Ampersand. Bed Tundy, Ampersand. The only general store that'll get you whatever you generally need." And he gives you all finger guns. And then he just leaves. That was it. He just wanted to get his jingle in. So he's gone. And you look forward and see Doris, who has arrived just before you. Doris, where would you position yourself if you were waiting for the other officers to come back?
I think she would just be sitting at a desk, like at like a table, and she's just sipping her tea. And she's just kind of, she has the vial of blood that she took sitting on the table in front of her.
And I will also say, I've done some research into resonance because I was fascinated by it, which exists in the Masquerade game, because you'd said Doris was doing experiments with emotion and blood.
Ooh, yeah.
And there are rules for resonance that we had not used previously, but I will introduce them for your experiment. So what I will say is, if you drain or drink blood from someone who is terrified, you can add one additional die to any of your blood sorcery checks until you burn the blood from that person. So if you get 1 point of hunger filled by a person who's terrified, you get +1 to your blood sorcery checks until you use up the blood that you drink.
And then you let me know when my hunger goes down.
Okay, I will track that.
All right,
something that we'll let that happen. However, you were sitting there with your blood tea and whatever paperwork was left on your desk when these two stroll in with a captive and perhaps some news.
Oh, hello.
Val, well, oh... This is going to keep happening, isn't it? Yeah. I was going to say that Val will take the captive and shove him at Troy and say, put him in a cell.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I totally would, but there's sort of already vampires in all the cells. So you like want somebody to eat him or like which one do I put him in?
There's not. Oh, fuck.
We've got three cells. So there's like Fabian, LaCroix in the first one because you kind of left her in there. And then there's Kai and Bear. And then there's I think his name's Alfred, Alford in the third one.
Is he human? Is this guy that you brought in human? Well, he's just a human, isn't he?
Yeah, but he could know where Officer Clark is.
Well, then just seat him right here. Well, I can ask him some questions. There's no need to throw him in a cell.
I was hoping for just that, Officer Barbara. I saw the kind of work you did down at the retirement center, and I was wondering if you could duplicate it here. He's been uncooperative so far, quite untalkative.
Oh, well, that's a shame.
Belle will seat him next to Doris then.
I'm going to check something because sunlight is beginning to cross over the horizon. It does not affect any of you in here because there are no windows, but it is a challenge for a vampire to stay awake during the day because it is not comparable to human sleep where we just get tired and can sleep or can wake up. It is almost a supernatural coma that you fall into as the sun rises. So it has to be actively resisted. It will be a humanity roll. So whatever your humanity score is, I think most of you are humanity eight, nine. Eight, great. So you'll be rolling eight dice. The others have not told you that Evie is missing. Mm-hmm. So that will make this difficulty four.
Okay.
Because you don't have a radio, so you could not overhear the message.
That is a four.
That's four successes?
Mm-hmm.
All right. You will stay awake, but I need the same thing from the other two of you. So
I'm rolling six dice.
What was it again?
It's your humanity score is what you're rolling.
And do we include hunger die in that?
Probably not. It's just this humanity. It doesn't specify it. So just no hunger. Just
should I roll less because I have one stain and or should I roll the whole thing?
Roll your usual score.
Okay.
I also eked out four successes.
Excellent.
I got two successes.
Val, unfortunately, you are so exhausted by the hunt, the beast having arisen within you, and so ashamed, you realize that you have moments before you fall into your supernatural slumber. Hmm. There are coffins in the basement that you can rest in, but you will not be able to leave the station.
That's fine.
How many successes did you get?
Two.
You have time to fire off a quick text on your way down.
That was her plan, for sure. So she's going to go down to the basement but before she's in the basement, going to fire off a quick text to her son and just say, bad night, working late, be safe, send. And I feel like she has a pretty nice phone because her son is a 90s child. So he hooks her up with that kind of stuff. Then she's just she didn't even say anything to anybody. She just walked downstairs and left.
And you get a response that you can read just as your eyes close before you fall into the torpor of slumber that just says, hey, I got a job. So exciting. And you do not have time to respond. You simply fall into unconsciousness before you can. Meanwhile, upstairs, the two of you have remained conscious with an effort of will. Both of you will be able to remain awake for this scene. That is all you'll be able to manage before you need to crash. But you do have a chance to interrogate your captive. So take it away.
I would like to just kind of sit and just kind of stare up at him and just say, hello, sir.
He says nothing. This guy is bald. You would know looking at him that he has very similar build and features to the faceless victim that you had seen inside the circle behind the retirement home. He's also dressed in a retirement home orderly uniform. So from what you'd heard of two baldies, this feels like it's probably the evil baldy, if you had to use such a term.
Right.
Everett, before this begins, I'm going to imagine you would have filled
Doris in. Let her know, like, time is of the essence and to maybe even fuel her efforts with urgency, let her know that, you know, this guy might be our only chance at figuring out where Clark is, Officer Clark.
Assume you have all the information of what happened during their adventure.
Right, right. Doris. You know, I've only come across two sets of evil twins in my life, but it's a pleasure to have time. You won't tell me your name.
He's just standing there stoic.
You're going to talk. So you can either talk of your own accord or I can make you talk.
He spits in your face.
And she'll just kind of look at him like, that was rude. and then just say, I see. And then she'll just, I'd like to cast Compel.
Yeah, let's go for it. How does Compel work?
Compel works by Charisma plus Dominate versus Intelligence and Resolve.
Go for the roll then. Let's see what happens.
All right. One, two, three.
You are successful as you stare into his eyes. I'm imagining he is standing, sitting. Everett, what would you do with the prisoner? And where would you be relative to this so I can paint the
scene? I'd sit him down and I'd be standing. I'm assuming Officer or Doris is sitting down like kind of across from him, and I'd be mm-hmm. standing behind her.
Perfect.
I'd have like handed her back the handkerchief that she gave me to like wipe the blood off myself for her to get the spit off of her.
The one that I said that I promised I wouldn't do any blood rituals on?
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So if it worked.
Yeah. How does Compel look when she uses Compel? Like if we were to see the scene from the outside.
I think how it works is she already has one blind eye from that tarot accident many, many years ago. But I think her other one goes white, but it's like a different kind of white. It's almost like it kind of like rolls back up in her head. Ooh. So you see like the behind of her eye. And then the other person is kind of like forced to look into her eyes and they can't kind of look away. And the longer that they talk, I feel like the closer their faces get together.
Okay.
Not in like a creepy romantic way, but just in like a, like the other person desperately just wants to talk and like connect with her. And by doing so, they're just like, they feel compelled to like get as close as possible to tell her their secrets.
Cool. Yeah. So he's leaning fully forwards, just staring into your eyes.
Then I think she'd say, who do you work for, rude boy?
And he looks around for a moment away from you. And his brow furrows. And he's almost confused, you would guess, if you were looking at him. Doris, sometimes you struggle with emotions. So I will have you roll either intelligence or wits plus... I would accept awareness, or what skill do you think you'd be using to try to read emotion in other people if it was something else?
Probably intelligence and...
Could Is there be. Any way I can help having being standing over her shoulder?
Yeah, I think that's worth it. Why don't we say use Everett's investigation skills? Because I think that would apply. So Everett, what's your investigation total?
Four.
Four? All right. And we'll use Doris's intelligence.
Okay, so seven?
Yeah.
One, two, four out of seven.
Great. You realize looking at him because he's been so compelled and he's so tuned in when he looks back that he wasn't breaking away from the power. He's legitimately confused. I don't know. I was hired to take people from a map, and then I was somewhere, and my boss was somewhere, and then we had to go get some more people, and then something, and then you cops were there. I don't like cops.
Well, you should. We're very respectable people, as we all know. Now, you've obviously been enchanted of some sort, but where is Evangeline Clark?
Who?
Evangeline Clark. She looks like me, but not. But wearing my outfit.
Was she in the other van?
Indeed, she was, rude man.
We split up, so I don't know where that other van went.
Well, then tell me where to find your friends.
I came from somewhere. I only remember the driving,
he says, clearly panicked.
Ask him, there were two others in the van with him. They were dressed in tactical gear. Ask him about them.
Who were you driving with?
I was driving with... and you can see him almost break through physically a mental barrier. You wouldn't be able to see it if you weren't so close, but his compulsion means you can spot all the little movements in his face. And he's like, I was traveling with
Victor and Sammy. Victor and Sammy, we were in the Marines, and then we started going freelance, and we were doing jobs all over the place, and then we were in Vancouver. We were going to Vancouver for work, and then I was driving in town. I was driving in town for the boss.
And who's the boss, rude human?
I heard them over the radio. It's a woman. How can I not know more? How do I not know more? Why don't I know more?
I believe someone's been in your mind before I have.
I don't want that.
Well, then perhaps you chose to work for the wrong people.
I guess if you're telling me, then yeah.
Is there any way to undo the work of someone else?
I don't know. Is there a way to undo the work of someone else?
Let's roll intelligence and your blood sorcery skill. I think that'd be representative of your understanding of the magic. You've got a specialties in occult. I'm trying to remember what it is.
Yes, I have specialties in a lot, actually. occult, politics, persuasion, intimidation, and academics.
Okay, let's add an additional die. I feel like combining your specialties in occult and academics should pay off.
Cool. 1, 2, 3, 4. That's 5 out of 6 successes.
Ooh. All right, you are very successful. No. Unfortunately, when you're tampering with the mind, you can remove things, but it removes them wholeheartedly. There's no layer underneath.
I'm afraid we won't be getting much out of this one. The damage has been permanent. That's why you have to know what you're doing. And I feel like the person who did this knows what they're doing. I'd like to meet them.
Yeah, maybe we just need to ask different questions. Like, where does he sleep at night?
Ah.
Or during the day, if he's out at night.
Tactics. Where do you sleep, human?
I got to the retirement home by van, but it was the retirement home van, and I was driving. I don't know. I don't know at all.
Do you know where to go if we let you go?
I would run. I would run so fast.
But where would you run to?
Probably Russia. I got friends there. This place is bad. This job is bad. I don't want this job. I don't want to talk with you anymore.
I would
like to go,
please. I've always wanted to go to Russia.
We can go together. I'll be your friend, he says. You realize he's under compulsion? This is not a lie. He's ready to team up with you as a way to get out of this place.
Without breaking eye contact with him, she'll just say to Everett, she'll just say, I don't think we're going to get much more out of this broken man.
We have to do everything we can to find Officer Clark. Someone has her. The sun is rising.
We could perhaps hang him from the sheriff's office, and his friends would see him and they'd lure him in. I've seen it done. They don't last very long, but it's possible.
Hang him?
Yes, in a cage. That's what they did in the 1700s, at least.
All right, let's hang on.
I want to pull out the map that I pulled out of that glove box.
Yep.
Just lay it on the table in front of him and say,
get him to tell us everything he knows about this map. This was in the glove box in his van. He talked about kidnapping targets on a map. That must be this, but maybe he can point out to other locations that aren't marked, like where he came from or where he took them.
And she'll take the map and she'll kind of hold that in front of her. And yeah, she'll basically just ask him, like, do you recognize this?
Right. Let's roll another compel. I feel like this is a new line of questioning, and he's been very obviously threatened, and compel does not compel anyone to do
totally
things
fair.
That will damage them.
Charisma plus dominate. Yep. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Oh, yeah. That's all successes with 2 tens.
Ooh.
Oh, that is the most success possible. I won't even act this out. I'll just tell you at this point what you would figure out over the rest of this investigation. He was part of the team who went to those houses. They had a team of, as far as he knows, his friends and a second team. He did not interact with them directly. They always rode in their own vehicle. In each case, they kidnapped whoever was in the house.
Which houses, sorry?
So the houses marked on this map are the houses of the victims who came in and were frenzied. So it was Thomas Jerry, the Nosferatu, Brad Spitz, the Gangrel, and a Bruja simply known as Jay. along with Fabienne Lacroix. So clearly they've been marked out. And what you can infer from that, from simultaneously excellent roles and your general investigatory skills, these teams were there to pick up the vampires and give them over to essentially the other team in the other van. So he participated in those. They clearly had done research. They'd been in the community for a while. You can't figure out exactly how long because his mind has been thoroughly wiped. It would seem like every time they left the hideout, mind wiped, they would do the mission where they knew it was doing, mind wipe again afterwards. So you can only find out these details peripherally. Okay. For you, Doris, this would be very concerning because to be able to remove a single memory of like a moment is challenging. To be able to remove swaths this big, it would either take days to weeks, or it's somebody who is incredibly powerful and experienced.
And that's where her mind would go, considering the warding that she experienced in the X shed.
Yeah. So that is the full amount you'll get by the time you are done interrogating. And you do see the sheriff's office opens and Barty tromps out.
All right, so you found a guy, and we got some people in the prison. So what do I do? We don't have enough cells. Then he seems meaner than shit. What do you want me to do with him?
Well, Officer Barbara mentioned some kind of cage that you hang people up in outside the station.
What?
I'm just saying.
We don't do that.
Think about it.
Fucked up.
Think about if you're fishing. Remember those deep sea fish that have the things on their heads that lure in the other fishes? And then they just swim right into their mouths. So if you look at the sheriff's office as a mouth, and then you hang him on top, like the light on the fish's head.
I don't want to say anything bad about Doris, but I'm going to tell you right now, Sheriff, she's kind of fucked up. Like, the sentencing comes down to you. All I'm saying is, if we put him in one of the cells, who are you going to put in the cells together? We got Kai and Bear, we got Alford from the Note Nostra, and we got Fabienne Lacroix.
We need more cells.
I can't do that tonight.
Well, Sheriff, you're in charge.
I still want to question some of the vampires that were frenzied. We got two of them in there?
No, it's just Fabienne. You ate the other one.
Greetings, children of the night. It is I, Count Vlad von Lestat, drinker of blood, keeper of the chronicle, and all around the spooky dude. I used to host Blood and Syrup, but now I spend all of my time in the Dum Dums and Dragons Patreon. Yes, for just the cost of $1. You can join the Patreon, get into the Discord, and talk to other fans about everything that's happening in your favorite shows. Alternatively, at higher levels, you can get ad-free feeds. You can add names and locations to the shows, or at the $25 level, you can even create your own NPC of darkness, or light, or whatever various lighting solution you want. You create your character, and they appear in one of our shows, causing all forms of shenanigans, and your name ends up in the credits. It's a pretty sweet deal. In any case, join our Patreon of Darkness at patreon.com/dumdumdice. That's DUMBDUMBDICE. Sleep well, children of the night. Spooky.
Sorry, I heard there's two boys, Fabienne, and who's the third one?
Yeah, so that's Alford. What's this fucker's name?
Who's name? Alford?
Alford the Fang Rudy. He's from the Note Nostra. We caught him hiding in a shed under an inflatable boat.
Right. What do you normally do when you've got overflow like this? We can't let him go.
One time, I just tied them up and kept them in my attic. We can do that if you need.
That's an option, or traditionally, Camarilla law just sends a lot of people to death, so we could put the vampires together and see if they kill each other.
I'm not trying to see anyone get murdered during the day. We've got an ongoing investigation.
Okay,
we're missing an officer.
What if I put Fabienne in with Kai and Bear? They'll know if they kill, Fabienne, they're fucked, so I don't think they'll do it.
You think that's all right?
Your call.
Oh, boy, you're really putting this on me, huh?
My attic is available.
Yeah, you can tie him up in the top.
Let's go with your attic then, Doris. Mm. Thank you. You got like a trunk you can lock him up in or something? A big like steamer trunk or something?
I have many trunks.
All right, that was the scariest thing I've heard you say for some reason. All right, good, good. Let's cuff him and make it one of them that you can lock, but I don't know, make sure it gets air.
Put him in the air. I was just going to say, I'll put him in the one with air holes.
Newest top spot for scariest thing you've said. You just keep on topping it. Boy, I don't think I can keep my eyes open much longer. I got to go.
Yeah, so
thank you both.
There's space for you to go down to the basement to get yourself some sleep. But on the, what? We got a lot of phone calls. He's just yelling after you, clearly. Like, what happened the night? What do I do? But you are so zonked that you know you can't make it. So you barely get downstairs and fall into a coffin. Doris, you take your new captive prisoner victim. We'll choose terms later. Upstairs. Can you roll me an intelligence and a medicine? Because yes. I want to find out if your trunk has enough air holes.
Okay. That's two successes.
He will survive the night.
Okay.
He will not be happy about it.
That's fine. But
you jam him into a steam trunk with just enough air holes, and you yourself fall into sleep. However, a few hours beforehand, in a darkened basement, Evangeline, not hours, but like an hour beforehand. Evangeline, you awake to blood dripping into your mouth to the point where you can feel yourself coming back from nothing. This was equivalent to when you are under anesthetic. It's an all the way out time loss. You don't have any answers. However, the last thing you experienced was equivalent in a lot of ways to the time that you were sired. You were pinned down. You were trapped. You were dying, and the only thing you could see was a vampire who would not let you go. So you wake up from a living nightmare to a new horrifying nightmare. You are seated in a chair. You can only tell because you can feel it. Your hands are chained behind your back. The chains burn. They burn in a way that you have not experienced it since before you were a vampire. You've experienced pain in a vampiric way, which is distant from the body. It's more of a concept of pain and discomfort than it is the sharp experience that we all have as mortals. You are feeling that on your wrists, around your neck, tying you in place, and around your ankles. However, you are looking straight up and you cannot move. You are pinned as though fully paralyzed with your mouth open, and you are looking up into the face of a dying woman. She's being held over you. Her throat has been cut and blood from her neck is dripping into your mouth, bringing you back to consciousness before she is thrown aside. You hear footsteps stepping away from you, and you feel an open wound on your left arm. It's still dripping. Can you roll me a wits and awareness?
Yeah, so what's my hunger status now?
4. The wound on your wrist is closing up as you speak.
So that's just 4 hunger dice.
Great.
Jesus Christ. That is 2 successes.
You get the feeling they've been running blood through you as opposed to just feeding you. Because for them to be pouring blood into your mouth and bleeding you out at the wrist, it feels like you're not as full as you should be if they had drained someone into you. However, you hear a stirring and the muttering of an ancient language that you cannot make out. It does not match any language you've heard before. I think you're relatively worldly, at least in experience. You may have traveled a little bit from your personal history, or at least read up about other places to be knowledgeable.
Yeah.
It's not recognizable as a human language. Think along the terms of hearing Aramaic without subtitles. Ancient, powerful, very scary. Then you feel a shock as movement returns to your body. Something is withdrawn from your chest that you couldn't feel there.
Ugh.
For the first time, you immediately look down, and what you see is that a wooden stake has been withdrawn from your heart, which has allowed you to move again. However, you cannot move your body. Wrapped around your ankles, which is the only one you could see from where your neck is pinned in place, you can see that you've been bound in silver chains to a steel chair that's bolted to the floor. This is not a folding chair. This is not something that can be easily broken. This is a hefty, clearly meant to trap a vampire chair. Looking around the room, you see that you are in what you would have to estimate is a workshop of some kind. It is underground. There are no windows. The space is lit only by candles. And you can see work tables and other woodworking tools, as well as slabs of various kinds, varieties of wood. Yeah. I don't know a lot about woodworking. along the walls, and projects creating chairs and other pieces of furniture half completed. However, in front of you, you see a golden cauldron that is boiling over a small fire. The smoke is being fed out of the room by industrial fans at either side. And within it is boiling blood. From the smell, you can infer, based on your successes, that some of that blood is probably yours. And standing behind this cauldron is a vampire. And I say that because you can tell they are a vampire by merely glancing at them. They have alabaster skin. It appears as though they were carved out of marble. They're in an elaborate black dress, wearing a mask that is tied around the temples. They have swooping black hair that extends to their waist. And their face is obscured behind lines of black obsidian beads, leaving the impression of eyes and of an intense expression, but even more so the menace of those beads. You feel, as the final words are muttered by this figure, all of the blood still in your body pulled forwards and forced into your mind, and you can war against that. So I need a composure plus a cult roll for you.
Oh, great. This is a critical success, both on hunger dice.
Nice.
All right. Oh man, that's crazy. Oh, I gotta balance this. Like, so, how many successes did you roll?
Two.
So you have four successes. Oh wow, they have seven. So, in probably the most disturbing twist for you, your beast rises up inside your blood and strikes back as though fighting off the pressure. And you feel your beast can trump this magic, can trump anything. The rage is there. You're straining against your bonds, threatening to sever your own hands to try to escape, to attack the person coming at you, until you feel their will enter the fray. Before you realize you were just fighting the magic and the insistence of this ritual that was underway, and now you feel the magic user before you step in spiritually and with their focus, and they clamp down so hard that your beast goes from screaming and raging in despair to gone. The darkness inside you dares not stand against the magic that is being presented. And the figure in front of you looks down and says, "What do you all know about my plans?"
What do we know? Who the fuck are you?
Is what you think. But due to the magic, your body can only answer the truth.
Nothing.
Excellent. Then we can build a brighter future together tomorrow. And she steps forward and rams the wooden stake back into your heart, sending you back into the cold, black hell of Torpor.
This episode of Canada by Night features the voices of Tyler Hewitt, Claire Blackwood, Del Borovic, and Laura Hamstra, alongside storyteller Ryan LaPlante. This episode was edited and mixed by Laura Hamstra, and Canada by Night's artwork was created by Del Borovic at delborovic.com. That's DelBorovic.com. Our theme songs are "What's Really Going On Right Now" by Chase Allen Willis and "Traffic" by Kai Engel. And our ad breaks use the tracks "No Control" and "Cheeps" by Jazzar, J-A-H-Z-Z-A-R. All of their music is available at freemusicarchive.org. Canada by Night is a spin-off of the Dum Dums and Dice series Blood and Syrup. If you want to hear about what happened to Everett before he came to New Haven, look for Blood and Syrup anywhere podcasts can be found. For all things Dum Dums and Dice, including merchandise and how to join our Patreon, you can visit dumdumdice.com or find us on social media at dumdumdice. That's D-U-M-B-D-U-M-B-D-I-C-E. Sleep well, my kindred. Sleep well in this world of darkness.
Dum Dums and Dice has to give a special thank you to the supreme beings of our Patreon at this time. Christian Menicola, the Half-Blind Prophet, Christopher Little, Sue One, George Dolby, One True Artistry, Orion Birchfield, Lord of Bradovic, Noel Lewis, Scott Garland, Anthony Griffin, Jordan Neesmith, Benjamin V, Gavin and Abby McDonald, Cade Peters, Richard Cranium, Anna Zed, Eric Williams, Logan, Fire Unfriendly, Acrix, Cameron Ezel, Grandma Likes D&D, Austin Nut Powers Fry, Stabby Stranger, and Jill and Noel LaPlante. If you want your name to be added to this list, you can join our Patreon too at patreon.com/dumdumdice. Thanks to them, and a little bit of thanks to you.
The Fable and Folly Network, where fiction producers flourish.